Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, August 11, 2020. We will begin today with the headline on the front page entitled, 12 Families Displaced by Downtown Minier Fire. Two buildings devastated by blaze, no injuries reported. This is by Sierra Henry. Daryl Luttrell first woke to the sound of crackling wood in his downtown Minier apartment early Monday morning. When he opened his eyes, he found the room engulfed in smoke. That's when Luttrell and his girlfriend, Emily Bullard, jumped into action and sounded the alarm. A fire was spreading. By the time I turned around, the smoke, was just pouring out, said Luttrell, who helped alert firefighters and wake up residents. My brother says I'm a hero, but I don't feel like it. 12 families were displaced by a fire that devastated the downtown Minier buildings, including an apartment building, Minier Police Chief Daryl Weslow said. Officials reported no injuries. A cat died in the fire. The fire was reported around 1:45 a.m., and more than 50 firefighters from 13 different departments battled the flames until 8 a.m., By 10 a.m., crews were still on the scene monitoring smoke, which wafted throughout the downtown area. Police blocked off a section of Main Street and parts of Central Street, Minier Avenue, and Chicago Street for several hours. The fire reportedly began at Novelties and More Food at 118 South Main Street before spreading to Mainview Manor, 120 and 122 South Main Street, Weslow said. The Illinois Fire Marshal's office is investigating the case. The fire is the largest Weslow has seen in over 20 years, saying it's devastating so far. The village sent out alerts asking residents to conserve water while firefighters battled the flames. Luttrell and his mother, Joyce Howard, have owned and operated the business out of the building at 118 South Main Street for 4 years. The family works concession stands selling funnel cakes and corn dogs at fairs and festivals across Illinois, and Luttrell lives in the back of the shop. But because of the COVID-19 pandemic, Howard and Luttrell have been unable to work this summer season. All of their equipment for the business was stored inside the building when the fire tore through. Everything wouldn't have been in that building, Howard said through tears, sitting at a picnic table across the street from the business. If it hadn't been for COVID-19, we'd be out on the road with it. This just means we have nothing to start back with. Luttrell, who has previously experienced the havoc of a house fire, said the loss of equipment does not compare to the sentimental items destroyed. The equipment ain't the hard part, he said. It's the things my dad left me, sentimental stuff, things that I had collected for years and years and years. I don't have anything. I can't even brush my teeth. But Luttrell stressed that he and his family were not the only ones who lost everything. Other families were displaced because of the fire, which destroyed both buildings. It's about all of us, he said. Families and friends were seen embracing outside the buildings as firefighters monitored the smoke. Some people walked through the street offering donuts to firefighters taking breaks. The American Red Cross of Central Illinois is providing financial and mental health services to families impacted by the fire. A fund has been set up at the First Farmers State Bank, 101 South Main Street in Minier, for anyone interested in contributing monetary donations for the families. Contributions have been made by Casey's General Store and Minier Tap. The Village of Minier is accepting donations for all sizes of men's and women's clothing, boys' and girls' clothing, non-perishable food items, personal hygiene products, and gift cards. People can drop off the items at the Village office at 110 West Central Avenue or call 309-392-2442 for more information. It's just been absolutely awesome to see everybody come together, said Weslow. This is locally probably the most complex fire, and there's been so many folks who came out of the woodwork. Another headline story is National Weather Service. Storm had 60 to 70 miles per hour wind gusts. By Bloomington Normal Fire Department's report, minimal damage from the storm. A fast-moving storm that swept through central Illinois left behind downed trees and power lines, blocked roads, and thousands of people without power on Monday evening. The damage that we've been hearing for the most part in central Illinois is tree limbs down, wind gusts of 60 to 70 miles an hour, some trees that have been uprooted, said Chris Gielhart, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service at Lincoln. Building damage was reported around Peoria and Champaign, he said. The damage was caused by a derecho, a rare storm that swept across the Midwest with 100 mile per hour winds in some areas. It lasted several hours as it tore from eastern Nebraska, across Iowa, and parts of Wisconsin and Illinois. This was a pretty widespread situation that went through, Gielhart said. Almost everywhere in central Illinois, from Springfield, Champaign, north, have seen some sort of impact from it. In northern Illinois, the National Weather Service reported a wind gust of 92 miles per hour near Dixon, and the storm left downed trees and power lines that blocked roadways in Chicago and its suburbs. Kathy Beck, assistant director of the McLean County Emergency Management Agency, reported trees and limbs down and some power lines down throughout McLean County. About 2,800 McLean County residents were out of power around 6:30 p.m. Monday, she said. Ameren crews are working on it, Beck said. I haven't seen or heard of any structural damage. Pantograph journalists found city crews blocking several streets with downed trees, large limbs, and power lines between 4:30 and 6 p.m. Affected locations included the 100 block of West Olive, Locust Street at its intersection with Clinton Street, a section of Oakland Avenue just off Allen Street, and Madison Street near Walnut Street. Matt Swaney, public information officer with the Normal Fire Department, and Eric Davison, public education officer with the Bloomington Fire Department, each reported minimal damage from the storm that passed through Bloomington Normal on Thursday afternoon. While some tree branches and power lines were down and firefighters were busy responding to calls during the duration of the storm, both departments reported no serious damage from the storm. Turning to pandemic information, we have cases mount in Tazewell County. COVID recoveries outnumber new cases in McLean County. And this is by Paul Sweech. While the number of people who recovered from COVID-19 outnumbered new cases in McLean County on Monday, new COVID diagnoses continued to add up in Tazewell County. Health Department spokeswoman Sarah Sparkman reported 16 additional cases on Monday and 65 since Friday. Tazewell County has had 535 confirmed COVID cases since March, 171 of them were last week. Of the 535 people, 319 have recovered, 201 are in home isolation, 7 are hospitalized, and 8 have died. No new deaths were announced on Monday. McLean County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight said Monday that 6 more county residents had tested positive for the novel virus, meaning 645 people have had confirmed cases since March 19th and 132 so far this month. A total of 529 have now recovered. A total of 101 people remained isolated compared with 116 on Sunday, McKnight said. No one was hospitalized compared with 1 on Sunday. 15 McLean County residents have died of the virus, but no new deaths have been confirmed in more than 1 month. McLean County's positivity rate, the percentage of the more than 30,300 tests of county residents that have come back positive for the virus, remained at 2.1%, McKnight said. The county's 7-day positivity rate through Sunday dropped to 1.8%, she said. A Livingston County woman in her 60s became that county's 3rd COVID fatality on Monday. The woman had been hospitalized. The county health department reported 8 new COVID cases, bringing that county's total to 118, said Erin Fogarty, a spokeswoman. The 8 people are recovering in isolation. LaSalle County Health Department reported 18 new COVID cases, bringing that county's new total to 785 confirmed cases. The 18 people ranged from teenagers to a woman in her 70s. Five more LaSalle County residents have recovered from the virus, meaning that 300 of that county's 785 confirmed cases have recovered. 24 LaSalle County residents have died of COVID-19, but no new deaths were confirmed on Monday, said Leslie Daugherty, that county's health department's public information officer. The more people that someone interacts with, and the longer that interaction lasts, the higher the potential risk of becoming infected with COVID-19 and COVID-19 spreading, McKnight said. Large in-person gatherings, where it is difficult for individuals to maintain social distance, pose the highest risk. Nearly half of the confirmed COVID cases are among people under the age of 30, McKnight said. Meanwhile, 389 more people were tested on Sunday at the COVID-19 test site at the McLean County Fairgrounds at 1106 Interstate Drive in Bloomington. McLean County Emergency Management Agency reported Monday that test site open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily is for anyone who can complete the nasal self-swab test. Illinois Department of Public Health reported on Monday 1,319 new COVID cases and one new death, a Cumberland County woman in her 90s. The statewide positivity rate for cases as a percent of tests for the 7-day period ending Sunday was 4.1%. As of Sunday night, 1,481 people in Illinois were hospitalized with COVID, and 352 of them were in intensive care units. Now we have an article, Housing Assistance Programs Launch. This is a state response to the coronavirus, by Peter Hancock. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Monday announced a pair of housing assistance programs aimed at helping lower-income households meet their rent and mortgage payments during the pandemic. The economic pain brought on by COVID-19 has impacted every Illinoisan, but no one has carried a burden larger than those least able to weather a financial hardship, Pritzker said during his announcement in Chicago. Every action that we take to pave our way through this crisis and beyond must be done with a special focus on those who have too often been left out and left behind. The two programs are being administered by the Illinois Housing Development Authority. The Emergency Rental Assistance Program will provide $150 million in federal CARES Act funding to help low-income households catch up on their rent payments. Tenants who are approved for that program will receive one-time grants of $5,000 paid directly to their landlords to cover rental payments they missed starting in March and to prepay rent bills through December or until the $5,000 is exhausted, whichever comes first. Those grants will not have to be repaid. Applications are being accepted through August 21st, although the application window may close early due to anticipated high volume. IDHA expects about 30,000 tenants to receive funding. Applications can be filed online at era.idha.org. To qualify, applicants must demonstrate that their income before March 1st was at or below 80% of their area median income, which the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development calculates for each county. Also, an adult member of the household must have had a loss of income due to the COVID-19 pandemic on or after March 1st, and the household must have an unpaid rent balance that began on or after March 1st. Once the application period for the Rental Assistance Program closes, IDHA will begin accepting applications for the Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program. Once the application period for that program closes, IDHA will begin taking applications for the Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program, which will make another $150 million available to households that have been unable to make their mortgage payments due to a loss of income during the pandemic. Under that program, the state will provide grants of up to $15,000 to approximately 10,000 households to pay past due mortgage payments, including escrowed first mortgage expenses such as property taxes, insurance, and certain fees. The grants will be paid directly to the homeowner's mortgage servicer and will not have to be repaid. To qualify for the mortgage assistance program, applicants must have reported an adjusted gross income on their 2019 tax return at or below 120% of the area median income. Also, an adult within the household must have had a loss of income due to the COVID-19 crisis on or after March 1st. Applicants must have been current on their payments as of February 29th, and their mortgage must be past due or in forbearance. Applications for mortgage assistance can be filed online at ema.idha.org. In March, Pritzker issued an executive order banning residential evictions in the state during the pandemic crisis. That order has been extended twice and is currently scheduled to expire August 22nd. During his remarks on Monday, Pritzker acknowledged that the $300 million in rental and mortgage assistance won't be enough to reach everyone needing help. The need here in Illinois and across the nation is tremendous, and we anticipate that there will be so many eligible and interested renters and homeowners that we won't be able to give every deserving family help, he said. But I will work with the champions in the General Assembly, as well as in Congress, to advocate for more federal assistance to keep people in their homes. In local news, we have Council Approves Demolition of Pool by Annalisa Trofimek. The demolition of O'Neill Park Pool will start in the coming weeks. Council members on Monday approved a contract for $138,526 with Stark Excavating to demolish the pool, which they said outlived its operational expectancy by 21 years. The local company was the lowest of four interested in the project. Designs are in the work for an aquatic center that will occupy the space at 1515 West Chestnut Street, according to city officials. The design work budgeted for the fiscal year is about $738,000, according to Nora Dukowitz, a spokesperson for the city. The pool has been closed all summer to prevent the potential spread of coronavirus. City Manager Tim Gleason, during his report to council on Monday evening, acknowledged service by the police, fire, and public works department, as well as by Ameren, Illinois, for their work on damage caused by storms earlier that day. Trees and power lines were down on several streets throughout Bloomington Normal, including Locust, Madison, Walnut, and Oakland. Where we were hit the hardest was up north at Lake Bloomington, the water treatment plant. We lost power, said Gleason, adding that Ameren was working to restore power while the facility ran off of a generator. Ward 1 Alderman Jamie Matthews said a tree fell near his neighbor's house. Lingering effects of the severe weather occurred during the council meeting. Ward 2 Alderman Donna Bolin said her power went out after she briefly disconnected from the meeting. Gleason on Monday mentioned the future recruitment plan for a new police chief. Bloomington Police Chief Dan Donath last week announced he will retire next month. Gleason said his approach for recruitment will be similar to what he did last year when Donath was hired. It is a national search, Gleason said. I am confident that we can make the appropriate selection when that time comes. I've got great resources in this community. He said city officials are looking for a strong leader who can serve the community and have the ability to sympathize and empathize with residents. Gleason reiterated that the search for a new chief will not begin until after January 1st. Assistant Police Chief Greg Scott will serve as interim police chief upon Donath's retirement. In other business, council members approved a measure that will allow for construction of 15 new homes in Fox Creek Village, which is southwest of the Fox Creek Golf Course and south of Carrington Lane. The city will further discuss sidewalks and infrastructure that will be handled going forward. Council members on Monday also approved a $482,000 agreement with Corrective Asphalt Materials, LLC, for road improvements. The project, the Pavement Protection Program, involves using emulsion made of petroleum oils and resins to seal and protect roads. Next, we have YWCA, School Age Care Continues, by Paul Switch. YWCA McLean County Young Wonders, which has served school-age children in McLean County for more than 30 years, said Monday that the organization is committed to continue educating children through the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. The statement came after Bloomington District 87 and McLean County Unit 5 announced Thursday afternoon that they will shift to remote learning for the start of the fall semester because of the recent rise in COVID-19 cases. Both districts said they would reevaluate in October to determine whether they could begin returning students to in-person instruction. "We will continue offering part and full-time options for school-age children this fall," said Melissa Breeden, Young Wonders Senior Director. "Children's health, safety, and education is a priority for us. We are happy to provide an affordable option and to work with parents and guardians to meet their needs and schedules to the best of our ability." Safety measures have been in place at the YWCA at 1201 North Hershey Road in Bloomington since March. At the YWCA, where summer camp is wrapping up, staff members take a daily health survey, and anyone entering the building observes safety protocols, including mask wearing, temperature taking, social distancing, and hand washing, YWCA said in a statement. The building is cleaned daily with a hospital-grade cleanser. Young Wonders serves children 6 weeks through 12 years old. School-age child care begins August 24th, and part and full-time options are offered. Small classroom activities include social-emotional learning, e-learning support, and tutoring. Each child will receive a hot lunch, light breakfast, and an afternoon snack. Care will be offered at the YWCA, Oakland Elementary School at 1605 East Oakland Avenue in Bloomington, and for special needs students at Colleen Hoos Elementary School at 600 Grandview Drive in Normal. Other locations may be added. Christy Germanis, YWCA Director of Marketing and Public Relations, said Monday that the YWCA isn't saying yet the maximum number of students that it can accept until the number of locations is finalized. YWCA can serve a maximum of 100 students just at 1201 North Hershey Road, Bloomington, she said. "We are pleased we will be able to help close the gap for children with special needs and those with an IEP, or an Individualized Education Program," Breeden said. Families will have access to free weekly produce. To help offset parent costs, the registration fee of $50 for school-aged children will be waived through the end of August. The fee for school-aged care is $34 per day. To register or for questions, call 309-262-1056 or 309-662-7826. In local court-related news, we have Murder Trial Sets Opening Statements, by Kelsey Watznauer. Opening statements will begin Tuesday in the murder trial for a Decatur man accused in the 2018 death of a Bloomington man. Six men and six women were selected Monday to sit on the jury in the trial for 21-year-old Taiwan Bruce. One man and one woman were chosen as alternate jurors. Bruce is charged with first-degree murder, home invasion, and robbery in the death of 20-year-old Edgerton Dover, who was fatally shot December 5, 2018 in his home. The defendant's two murder counts are considered forcible felonies involving home invasion and robbery. This indicates Bruce, or someone Bruce is legally accountable for, is accused of committing the crime of home invasion, which caused Dover's death, and the crime of robbery, which caused the death. 8 charges were originally filed against Bruce, but 4 of those were dropped before the jury selection process began on Monday morning. Bruce is one of 3 Decatur men who police believe to be involved in Dover's death. His co-defendant, Anthony Grampassas, was found guilty of first-degree murder and home invasion when a McLean County jury returned a verdict on July 23rd. A third person allegedly involved in the homicide, 18-year-old Curtis Hairston, died during a 2019 shooting outside a Decatur restaurant. During the jury selection process, the attorneys asked potential jurors about any prejudice they might have involving law enforcement, firearms, cannabis, and alcohol. The 12 jurors and 2 alternates who ultimately were selected will hear the state's first evidence after opening statements on Tuesday. And we have jury selection to continue in arena trial, also by Kelsey Watznauer. 4 jurors were seated Monday in the trial for the president of Central Illinois Area Management accused of mishandling money while he managed the city-owned arena, then known as the U.S. Cellular Coliseum. Prosecutors will pursue 34 criminal charges against John Y. Butler, 60, including fraud and theft of government money during his operation of the arena, which is now under different management as Grossinger Motors Arena. 10 charges were dismissed before the jury selection process began on Monday morning. Jury selection will resume Tuesday, and opening statements are expected to begin on Wednesday. Butler's trial is expected to last 3 weeks, with the first evidence to be presented Wednesday after opening statements. We have Man Faces Battery Charges by Kelsey Watznauer. A Champaign man faces battery charges involving an officer in McLean County. Davante C. Crabb, 26, is charged with 2 counts of aggravated battery, accused of throwing a traffic cone at a Bloomington police officer, striking him with the cone on Sunday. He is also charged with 1 misdemeanor count of resisting an officer. Crabb was released on a $10,000 personal recognizance bond. An arraignment was scheduled for September 11th. And we have a man accused of kicking an officer in the face. Battery charges are pending against a Bloomington man after an alleged altercation with a police officer. Leon A. Thomas, 24, is charged with aggravated battery, accused of kicking a Bloomington police officer in the face on Sunday. He is also charged with 3 misdemeanor counts of resisting an officer. Thomas was jailed in lieu of posting $1,035 bond. An arraignment was scheduled for September 4th. And with that, we conclude the first part of the Pantograph reading for Tuesday, August 11th, 2020. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with part 2.